Well, the August 4th primary is behind us and the November ballot is taking shape. Here in Clark County, turnout was about 38.5%. By the Monday after the election, we had only about 200 ballots still to be counted, with a few others trickling in and certification on August 18th. In the 3rd Congressional District, Democrat Marie Glusenkamp-Perez and Republican John Braun are advancing to the general election. Here in Clark County, Perez received about 39% of the vote, Braun about 35%, and Democratic challenger Brent Henrich about 20%, with the remaining candidates accounting for another 6%. This is going to be a competitive race for sure. Rural counties gave Braun a stronger showing, narrowing the gap between the two candidates. The 3rd Congressional District is huge. It includes Clark, Cowlitz, Lewis, Pacific, Skamania, and Wakayakum counties, along with a small portion of Thurston County. And it's one of the most competitive districts in the country, a key battleground in the fight for control of the U.S. House of Representatives. Donald Trump carried this district in the past 3 presidential elections, even as Democrat Marie Glusenkamp-Perez won the seat in 2022 and voters reelected her in 2024. Now, polling before this primary showed Perez and Braun essentially tied, so we're going to be following this race closely, as will the rest of the country. Democrats also had a strong showing in several closely watched state legislative races. In the 17th District, Ben Chrisley led incumbent Republican Kevin Waters, while Diana Perez led incumbent David Stebe. In the neighboring 18th District, Democrats Randy Knott and Deacon Letnich also led their Republican opponents, Stephanie McClintock and John Lee. In the seat vacated by Sharon Wiley in the 49th Legislative District, Vancouver City Councilor Kim Harless led with roughly 53% of the vote, while Sarah Middleman, a former Democrat now running as a Republican, received about 29%, and Democrat Mike Pond received about 19%. And if you listened to our primary election show, you heard from several candidates for 2 Clark County Council seats. In District 1, incumbent Glenn Young and Brian Shull, not the incumbent or a Democrat. And if you listened to our primary election show, you heard from several candidates for 2 Clark County Council seats. In District 1, incumbent Glenn Young and Brian Shull advanced to November, with political newcomer Dusty Arab narrowly missing a spot in the general election, while in District 2, incumbent Michelle Belcott will face John Zingale. And on the most important race of the entire county, the auditor, the 2 who advanced are far-right candidate Eileen Quiring, who was invited to speak with us in June, but declined, and Mitchell Kelly, who we heard from in June. So there's an interview that you can listen to. And let's not overlook the races for the Washington Supreme Court. 5 seats are up for election this year, including 1 open seat. Those races could really matter. One issue likely to come before the court is the new millionaire's tax, which is already facing a legal challenge. Now, we're going to be talking about that tax with our guests today, the candidates for Position 2 in Washington's 17th Legislative District. Republican David Stebe is seeking his 2nd term, and Democrat Diana Perez is challenging him. These 2 candidates bring very different backgrounds and perspectives to this race. We invited both of them to join us so that voters could hear directly from them about their experience, issues of affordability and taxes, health care, energy and environmental policy, and what they believe state government should be doing differently. And because this is Democracy Talk, we will ask both candidates what they think is happening to American democracy and what they can do about it from Olympia. We're here today with Washington State Representative David Stebe, who's running for re-election in the 17th Legislative District, Position 2, and who is also Mayor of Washougal. This is the 2nd recording of our first 10-minute segment due to technical issues, so our listeners may notice some tone differences in the audio. Welcome to Democracy Talk, Representative Stebe.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for making sure that I get a chance to express my thoughts and opinions and why it's so important for us all to be engaged.
Well, I appreciate that you're here doing this with us again, that you took the time to do that. So we always start, we want to make sure we give you lots of time to talk, but we only have 10 minutes. So tell us about who you are, why you're running for re-election, what's your platform, just tell us about it.
So this will be my 2nd term. So I've spent 2 years up in Olympia, seen behind the curtain. I think I've earned the trust and respect of all my peers up there. And it actually takes about 2 years to figure out what's going on up there and how to make an impact. And I think I've done that, and I've got a lot more to do. Right now, I'm spending more time going to hatcheries, ports, hospitals, daycare centers than I am campaigning, because I'm a state legislator. And so I'm committed. I'm trying to fix and solve problems. I really care about being part of the solution and not part of the problem. We have a lot of issues with this state right now. A lot of people want to tie that to federal issues, but I'm concentrated on state issues, affordability, cost of gas, cost of groceries, energy, daycare, deserts, hospitals, healthcare. A lot of people want to try and divert that to something federal, but we are in a state deficit, and I'm trying to get common sense politics into our state and solve problems. That's all I'm trying to do, Donna.
Yeah, well, and I know that there's a real tension there between the federal and the state level, and part of it is we've lost a lot of funds from the federal government. We've lost $165 million in this biennium, and it's estimated, like, for Medicaid, it's going to be another $13 billion over the next 10 years. So that puts state legislators in a pickle, right?
Yeah, but I will remind you this, Donna. 2 years ago, we were in the hole. $80 billion. That's what our budget was. And so we taxed everything. And we called it the fun tax. I mean, everybody. We tried doing all these different amendments on things, and everything was taxed. I don't care if it was your kayak, we taxed that. If it was your fishing license, your boating license, seniors, everybody, there was a tax. And we tried getting all these amendments like, well, you know, veterans shouldn't be taxed on that. No, everybody was taxed. And they're trying to fill a hole in the deficit. And that was 2 years ago. This year, we came back into session. We were still in the hole. This, I know we're going to talk about it, but the millionaire tax, you know, that was, wait, you know, that's a great thing. These people are making so much money. We're going to be able to use that to pay for childcare, healthcare, groceries, gasoline prices. No, that money was already spent. We're trying to still climb out of a hole that this state has created in the last 40 years. And we're trying to get out of that. And we got to stop bad spending and spend on things that earn ROI. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to provide common sense and a solution to get us out of that, to bring back to where we can have family, we can have community, we can have our kids get a good education, that our kids can get a great job and stay locally. And I'm all about family and community, and I think we need to start there. I can go off on a lot of tangents, but we need to fix problems upriver instead of waiting until it metastasizes to 1,000 things and we just throw bad money after bad money. And it's not good common sense for this state of Washington.
So what are your solutions? Because the millionaire's tax is actually, you know, meant to do things like alleviate some of the sales tax. I have to tell you, I love the part about diapers as a former single mom.
I don't understand that. Diapers?
Diapers.
Oh, diapers.
Diapers, yeah.
But that's a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid.
So I want to get back
to
what are your solutions? Because it's important that we don't have a state income tax,
yeah,
right? So all of these other things that get taxed are because of that. So what are you going to do?
So, well, we tried with 82 amendments to fix that millionaire tax. They didn't take, the majority didn't take one amendment. I was trying to reduce the sales tax. I thought, hey, if you want to do an income tax, let's do immediate relief and let's drop our sales tax. That would help everybody, not just diapers, but basic day-to-day needs. And not one amendment was approved. And we even, you know, the big one was, we said, guarantee that there's a threshold that it won't drop below the millionaires, and they wouldn't accept that one. So basically, even past governors, Democratic governors, are saying we've got a serious spending problem in this state. So I just want to fix things. I don't want to point fingers at anybody. I want to work together. I believe, as a 30-year Marine Corps colonel, one team, one fight. Let's make this a better state. I don't care if you're right or you're left. Is this state moving up or is this state moving down? And we are not attracting businesses. I've got CEOs telling me that they're leaving the state, and that's not good. So you asked me, Donna, how can we fix this? We need to attract business. We need to have people like they used to come to this state and want to create a business, create opportunity, to create family, to create employment opportunities, to create infrastructure. But right now, we're scaring companies away. We're probably one of the most desirable states to come and start a new business. And that is really sad, because for a long, long time, people would jump in their VW van and come out to Washington and want to make this their home, want to make this a place to create a family, a business, and we've lost that, and we need to get that back, or we're not going to survive as a state.
One of the things I thought was interesting today, I don't know if you saw it, but there was an article in the Washington Standard that said that 4,000 more people actually are going to be subject to the millionaire's tax. So we're in the second, like highest in the nation economically. So we have this situation where we hear a lot of negative things, but there's also a lot of good things going on. So again, what is it like? What kind of, do you want to do another tax? What do you want to do specifically?
So I want to attract business. So, okay. And as a mayor of Washougal, I'm going to give this example. But we had a rocket science company come to Washougal. It came down to Austin, Texas, and Washougal. And I got to make a joke about this. It was almost like cue the deer, you know, drop the down drop of Mount Hood, the Osprey, you know, flying with the salmon. This place, that's why I chose to retire here. I love the Pacific Northwest. We have so much that it offers, but we need to attract business. We need to attract people that want to make this their home and then give back and to give infrastructure, create jobs, to create education. With this company that came into Washougal, we went to Clark College and we set up a curriculum just to make sure that our kids can get the education to be able to perform the duties required of this company. And that is community, and that's what we need to do. It's sad when our kids leave.
I hate to cut you off, so that sounds like a great program. It's the kind of program we all support.
Yeah.
One of the questions that I need to ask you is about being both mayor and state legislator, and we only have just a little over a minute left. So,
okay.
So what's your perspective? Because your opponent's coming after you for that.
So that's an easy target, right? She probably has a full-time job. My full-time job is the mayor of Washougal and as a state rep. I'm a better state rep because I understand how local government works, and that's one of my committees. I'm a better mayor because I know how the city works, or the Olympia works. And so I do both 24/7. I think I'm bringing great things for both of that. I do want to make another thing. You asked me this question. How do we solve things? Right now, here is the biggest problem in the state of Washington. There is a super majority and we're a minority, and it's getting worse. This divide, we need to be more equal to be able to bring reason and to collaborate and work together. I think our detriment's going to be if we have this huge divide.
Well, I really appreciate that you've taken the time to talk with us. This is Democracy Talk, and yeah, We'll be right back, and you'll hear more from Representative and Mayor David Stebe.
K KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley & Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years. Licensed in Washington State, our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at buckleylaw.net. Buckley & Associates, we speak your language.
우리는 여러분의 언어를 구사합니다.
我们说你的语言.
Nosotros hablamos tu idioma.
我们说你的语言.
Welcome back to Democracy Talk. We're here with Mayor and Representative David Stebe, and we're talking about a lot of things in Washington State, including his candidacy for re-election. Before we go there, though, we were just talking about the millionaire tax, and we could probably spend the next segment talking about it. So the question I have is, you mentioned something like getting rid of the sales tax. So how are we going to pay for the social services and health care and child care and all those things that you say that we do need? Because you do say that, which is, unlike a lot of people, you're not just saying cut. You're saying, well, we have to support these things. How do we do that?
So I'm on the Transportation Committee, the Energy Environment Committee, the Health Care Committee, and the State Government Committee. So they're all very important committees. We have a lot to do out there. We are behind everywhere. This state, we bring in $80 billion, one of the highest in the United States, and we still can't afford to pay for all our things out there. We got a lot of things. We need to make sure that we take care of things. I care about our environment. I care about our roads big time. I care about our health care. I care about my kids, affordability, people staying in the state. Can you buy a house in the state? Right now, the average age of kids buying their house is in their 40s. And, you look at institutional wealth, I guess. We got our houses when we were early in life, and we can build that institutional wealth. When kids are starting later in their 40s, they can't build that wealth. And so we're not taking care of our next generation, and that's important to me. Healthcare is important to me. You look at my voting record with all that stuff. We used to be the best in the world. People would come from all over the world to the United States to get their health care. They're not doing that anymore.
Why do you think that is? Because I have a lot of ideas about that.
I think that now, and I talk to everybody. Everybody comes in to talk to me, and a lot of my family is in health care. But it's just overwhelmed right now, and the prices are just crazy. I talked to a constituent that had a bad accident, and he had $50,000 worth of bills out of pocket. And what the insurance companies charge for 2 bags of saline, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But the people that make the money that have insurance, they take that money and they're giving it to the people that don't have that money and can't afford health care, and we got to come up. Our system's broken, and we all got to come together as Americans and figure out. There's a lot of smarter people than me out there. The people that are in the industry, they need to work together, and we got to come with solutions to build America.
There are a lot of people who've spent a lot of time studying healthcare. And one of the things, we're talking about the budget, the Washington State budget. And there's losses.
And
but the fact of the matter is the federal government has taken money away from healthcare, from Medicaid, and the subsidies for healthcare. I personally have my healthcare costs increased by 2. I don't know about that. I'm on the ACA, so yeah. I'm actually paying over $1,000 a month for the basic plan.
Yeah.
And I'm not old enough for Medicare. Getting close, though. So we're dealing with that. How do we backfill that in the state of Washington without doing something like the millionaire's tax? What do we do? How do we balance the budget?
So, again, it's a spending problem. Why are we so far in the hole in all these different areas? Transportation, energy, healthcare, and those are just the committees I'm on. There's more committees out there. But where are we spending our money, and what is the ROI? We can't give everything away for free. Right now, Seattle politics, Portland politics,
they're looking at socialism.
Well, what should be cut? You're talking about it's a spending problem. What do you want to cut?
Where we're spending our money.
That's very nonspecific, okay. Mayor Stevie.
Let me give you one example. Seattle decides they want to electrify 25 ferries. So this is just one example. So I go up, I take a tour with the ferries. And, you know, it's great. You know, green, we're going to save whales or whatever we're doing. I go up there to take a tour with ferries. I leave the captain. I go down to the engineers. I'm military, right? You go down to the troops. I go down to the engineer and I say, hey, what are your thoughts about electrifying all these ferries? You got diesel ferries right now. He tells me the diesel ferries are very economical. They're easy to maintain. They're very efficient. And he goes, I think it's crazy that we're going this way. And this is the guy that runs the boat, right? Does all the engineering. And then I find out that in order to electrify these ferries, we've got to build them in Florida. So that's where the contract is. So we're spending all our money, state money, job money. We're taking it to Florida. They're going to build these ferries for us. They're going to tax us. They're going to charge us all this money. And they've got to tow them from Florida through the Panama Canal and bring them up to the Puget Sound. Why aren't we building these ferries? Why aren't we creating jobs for these ferries? Why is it not feasible to make these ferries in Washington? Because we have all these stupid regulations that we have to subcontract them out to Florida. That is completely asinine.
Okay,
that's
one.
Okay,
that's one.
I could tell
well,
you.
Let's move on. This is going to go by really fast.
We need more interviews because there's a lot to say. People, we need to vote and wake up and see what's going on in our
state. Okay. So how do you? You're on the Energy and Environment Committee. And one of the things that happened, and I've got to ask you about that, is there was a mailer sent out calling your opponent Dystopian Diana with some sort of extreme environmental politics. And I'm sure you're aware of it. I live in Washougal. Mark lives in Washougal. We all got the mailer. It was an outside PAC. I know that you didn't personally send it, but that's my question. Like, first of all, how do you balance energy and environment and funding? How do you balance those things? Or should you balance those things? Like, what do you privilege?
Absolutely.
Okay, what do you privilege?
So I will throw this out. I'm also on the nuclear caucus, and we got a report coming back from the feds, and we plateaued. We have culminated in our energy production. And it scares me. I have PDU briefs and all that. We are so close to having blackouts. We got the fires going on. We've got five seasons now. We're trying to be green and doing all this stuff. But we need to make sure that we are the cutting edge. This brief I got, they had us culminating. And there was a chart for China going straight up. They are doing coal. They're doing nuclear. They're doing wind. We're buying all of these turbines from China, these big blades, and we're not even sure how we're going to recycle those things. They break. It's good that we're going green, but we don't need to be the only answer out there. We need to make sure that we have backup for all that stuff, that we have alternate plans. And I'm really excited about the small nuclear. Everybody hates data plants that they're coming in, they're taking water and taking all this energy, and people think that they're raising their energy costs and we're paying for them. They can come in, they can build their own energy, their own electricity, and they give back, they build infrastructure. What happened out in Quincy is amazing. And the rep out there, Alex, is a buddy of mine, tells me about how they build a sports center and their community center. We need to be on the cutting edge. We cannot push away technology. We cannot push away advancement. it's just going. I'm sorry.
Right. No. And I mean, one of the things, and we, you're right, we have a lot that we could talk about. One of the things I would respond to is the fact that green energy is sort of being X'd out federally. So that kind of leads me to my next question. Okay. So our show is called Democracy Talk. We're here at wrap up already. So what concerns you most about the state of American democracy right now? And what role, if any, can a state legislator play in strengthening democratic institutions and public trust?
All right, this is important. So we are fractured as a country, and it pains me. Even our 250th anniversary, seeing fracture in that, it's like, come on, this is America coming together. And we need to be Americans, and I hate this division and the R and the D, and, you know, well, I'm a D, and so I'm going to have to only vote for Ds. And it's like, but you know me, I'm your neighbor. I cut up that tree in your driveway. Why aren't we coming together? And that's my biggest problem right now. I think what legislature can do, and this is where I'm really excited about going back up there, I've got a lot in the works. I've learned how to work the system. I can work across the aisles. I had D's calling me like, you've got this. And I'm pretty proud of that. That means I've made friends. I've earned trust and respect. And it took me 2 years to figure out how to do that. And I'm going to say it. I'm not one of the wackos on the left or the wackos on the right. I want to provide solutions. And I think my background, my experience, I can bring people together smarter than me, and let's make this a better state. Let's make it a better city. Let's make it a better district. And then, you know, all the federal stuff that's going on, I care about the state of Washington. We got to start here.
Yeah. Well, that actually does leave me to okay. my next question.
Okay.
So, you know, the Republicans, Washington Republicans, this is in the article you didn't see yet.
Okay.
They're talking about distinguishing themselves from the National Republican Party. I know that's something you just said, and the Trump administration. But you endorsed Joe Kent in 2024.
Yep.
Wait a minute. I want to say something about that. I had interviewed you not long before that. And I have to tell you, I was shocked because you talked about Pete Buttigieg and Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. And then you came out and you endorsed what someone I consider a wacko.
So that I made a mistake. I was trying to get in with the Clark County Republican Party, and it was kind of like, well, if you're going to run Republican, you got to work with us, and that's just the way it is. Joe, I met him. He was a SF guy, you know, so military, special forces. I'm a colonel. It's like, wow, I got to respect what he did over there. And so, yeah, I'll help him out with that. But after I got to hear all the stuff going down, I disagreed with his politics.
What about John Braun? He's going through. Are you planning to endorse him?
I haven't.
You haven't?
I haven't.
Well, you haven't. So, but are you? He just got through the primary. So
yeah. Well, both him and Murray.
Yeah.
Murray has done such amazing things for the state, for the city of Washougal. I mean, I was told not to take a picture with her, and it was like, are you kidding me? I'm the mayor. For all these projects I've got, she gives me money for the city. I appreciate what she does. John brings a lot to the table too, but as a mayor, I'm nonpartisan. And so, you know, I told John, hey, I can't, you know, officially endorse you. Marie, she's done great things for my city. So, you know, it's not an RD, it's the people. And voters, you have to look at who is going to bring solutions, not problems. Who's going to bring Seattle politics, Portland politics, or who's going to protect what we have down? That's
okay,
what I
have. Well, tell voters how they can get a hold of you, and then we're going to have to take a break and talk to you another time.
AlexDB.com. Come talk to me. Call me. I talk to everybody. Call my LA. I've got 2 years of experience. I've got a lot more to accomplish out there, and that's why I want to rerun.
Okay, that's STUEBE, and this is Democracy Talk. We will be right back with another candidate for the state legislature.
Thank you, guys. Please vote. It is so important to get engaged and understand what you're voting for.
Thank you.
Thanks
for coming.
KXRW programming like this is made possible with the support of the Columbian, proud to be Southwest Washington's leading news source. Since 1920, the Campbell family has owned and operated the Columbian and ensured its award-winning news coverage. For the most thorough daily coverage of local news, national news, and local sports, both in print and online, and for subscription information, visit Columbian.com. That's Columbian.com.
This is Democracy Talk, and we are here today with 17 legislative district candidate for position 2 for the state legislature, Diana Perez, and we're going to be talking with her about all sorts of things today. Welcome, Diana.
Hello, hello. So happy to be here with you.
So glad to have you here. So we always like to start by giving candidates an opportunity to introduce themselves. So your sort of quick and dirty stump speech and who you are and why you're running, and also tell us about how your experience will play into the work that you might do in the legislature.
Sure. I'm so happy to be here, especially to be a candidate for the 17th Legislative District position too, because I believe that the people of the 17th Legislative District need a hardworking champion. And I am that leader. And I've got the experience and the education behind me to be able to lead us into the future here and building a brighter future for us all. First, I am from El Paso, Texas, moved to Southern Oregon in 95, started off as a student intern with the USDA Forest Service as a biologist, and that's where I had the great experience of being on a 21-person firefighting crew, did initial attack, and know what that's all about in wildfire fighting. And from there, I went on to get my bachelor's in wildlife management and my fisheries master's from Oregon State University, and then added on a graduate certificate from Cornell in Executive Women in Leadership. So after 35 years in federal government, having worked in Alaska, Oregon, and Washington, and for the Washington office, I decided to retire. And there's a whole story behind that. But within that time period, I gave back a lot to my community and talent and skill. And part of that, which is how we met, Donna, which is community advocacy work. So I founded the Southwest Washington League of United Latin American Citizens Council. And that's where I was introduced to the idea of possibly running for office someday. And that's because of all the challenges and issues that our communities were facing. And after hitting my head against the wall, if I wanted change, I had to be the change. And that's when I took it upon myself to run for office. And there's an important distinction on why I ran for city council, Vancouver City Council. One, it was a nonpartisan position. So as a federal employee, I fell under the Hatch Act, which limited me to only nonpartisan positions. So with my retirement after 35 years, I am free to run for whatever I want. And within that community service work, and I was appointed by Governor Jay Inslee as a commissioner for Washington State Parks and Recreation. Some of my background is heavy on public lands management, so that really lended to the position on as commissioner for that. Once I came onto city council, really dove into policy work. And today I'm a commissioner for Washington State Housing and Finance Commission. So with that experience, with my education, with the community advocacy work, and now not being limited and being able to run for office, I feel like the universe positioned me well for the 17th Legislative District, because I've snorkeled almost every major tributary within the 17th. And I know what it's like working for rural communities and what the challenges that they face. So I'm very familiar with the unique challenges that Skamania County faces with Klickitat, and now having worked for the City of Vancouver Urban. So there's this unique juxtaposition of urban versus rural. On top of that, all the natural resources from hydro, solar, wind, etc. along the scenic area. I am just excited and feel like I've got the education, the lived experience, and the background to be the champion that the people need for the 17th Legislative District.
Well, that's a pretty comprehensive introduction. Thank you. And you worked for the Forest Service, I know. So your website says that the 17th Legislative District deserves a full-time representative and that you will leave the Vancouver City Council if you win this election. David Stevie is currently both a state representative and mayor of Washougal. So why do you think that distinction matters? Why is it that you would quit?
One, I believe that as taxpayer, my taxes should go to one representative. So it's kind of double dipping on the taxpayer money to be dual representing. And it could be a conflict of interest if you are in a position of having to make a decision on projects within Washougal versus the greater 17th. I think you're put in an awkward role for that. So which is why I've been saying I am going to step down from City Council and I will fully focus on the 17th Legislative District and make sure that I'm present, accessible, and really being that voice that Olympia needs for the 17th.
Okay. Well, so affordability, we all are talking about that, right? The cost of living, that's central to your campaign. And so when people in the 17th say that housing, groceries, childcare, healthcare, and energy all cost too much, what can the legislature realistically do to make their lives more affordable?
I think we need to address inflation, number one. Number two, we need to see whether folks can get paid more to catch up with what's happening. I also think that we need to look at some policies that maybe just a policy switch or tweak can open the doors for example, small businesses to be able to be better positioned. So, for example, childcare. I know that we have a limit on the number of children in childcare here in Washington State compared to Oregon. So, if we were just to compare the numbers and allow our regulations to not be so overregulated, that can help businesses. Sometimes we overregulate things that it costs more to provide a report, to apply for an application. The rigorousness and the time that it takes is costing us money. So that's just one little example where necessarily I don't think it's a one-time solution. I think we need to look at where policy can be tweaked to allow room to breathe for small businesses and individuals. I think we need to address the regressive tax system that we have in the state of Washington. And that is a huge one where you and I, Donna, we're paying 3 or 4 times what the upper 1% folks are paying. And I don't think that we can sustain that any longer.
Well, so you've actually made very clear that you think that the government needs to live within its means and make every dollar count. So what does that mean to you actually in practice? And by the way, those regulatory issues, I think, are really important. This is something that a lot of people are talking about, but we haven't seen anybody take action on yet.
Or we haven't felt anybody who has tried to take action. And I think that's the important thing is like, we're feeling the impacts of legislation, and what are we doing about those impacts? There's positive and then there's negative. Do we have a comprehensive understanding of the full spectrum of what those negative impacts are? And I think it's just gotten so convoluted. And we have systems built over systems on top of other processes and layers that now we've created this world of conflicting policy, stuff that doesn't make sense. So stepping back and taking a practical solution approach and identifying where there's a conflicting policy, where a one-size-fits-all doesn't really help, where the intended intentions that were meant to be beneficial really are being felt in a negative way. And the only way we're going to know that is by listening to the people and seeing data. And so I think stepping back and doing a really good comprehensive approach to, are we seeing the outcomes that we use taxpayer dollars for to get to a result that would be beneficial? And if we're not, if we're not seeing those outcomes, then we need to have those tough conversations. What changes need to be made? What duplication of efforts are out there? Where are there conflicting systems? Where can we make this more practical and more streamlined, or start over?
So that would that be one of the things you'd want to start with in the legislature?
Yes, in particularly with the budget.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
By that is there's going to be some tough decisions, from what I understand, related to the budget. And so, not having been in the legislature before, so I'm just going in with the main concept of, what did we fund? Are we seeing the outcome that we want to see within the time period that we allotted? Is this helping families, working families, small businesses? Is this tackling the regressive tax system that we have? So it's not just the one tool to address it. So there's the budget, there's the tax system, and then there's the process, because it's not going to happen in one legislation. It's going to happen in several legislations, really. For example, education. I think that we need to meet our paramount duty that we said we were going to do. And I think we need to look at that formula that's used as a one-size-fits-all and make a plan of action that we are going to not use this anymore, because there are schools that are not benefiting. And so those are some of the discussions that, with the proper committees and folks and groups that have been probably addressing this for the last couple of years, I think with added energy and renewed vigor, we could probably push the pendulum a little bit.
Well, on education, I have to tell you that the prototypical school model had a working group evaluating it when I was in the school board from 2017 to 2021. Nothing has happened. It got dropped. It just got dropped, I think, probably amidst the pandemic. So I hear what you're saying about really looking at what are the processes, what does this mean? And so that's been a problem for a long time, and it definitely needs to be addressed.
Yeah, follow through is one other area. I think that we identify all these great ideas and solutions, but the follow through is where we really need to take a harder stance on.
Well, you've been listening to Democracy Talk, and we've got to take a break. I'm here with Diana Perez, and she's running for the 17th Legislative District, Position 2, and we will be right back.
Shriners Children's has opened a new pediatric orthopedic clinic in Vancouver. The clinic offers evaluation and follow-up care for children and teens with orthopedic conditions, including sports-related injuries. Care is available regardless of a family's ability to pay. Details about the Vancouver Clinic are at shrinerschildrens.org/Vancouver Clinic.
Welcome back to Democracy Talk. I'm here with Diana Perez, who is running for the 17th Legislative District, Position 2. And we've been talking a little bit about how the legislature can do things a little bit differently. And one of the issues that keeps coming up is that of taxes. So what is your view of the new millionaire tax?
I think it's a tool in the toolbox to start looking at our regressive tax system. And a lot of information needs to be made aware of better, I think, out in the community. So, for example, when we talk about the millionaire's tax, we're talking about a 9.9% tax on the amount above $1 million. So under $1 million, it's not going to be impacted or affected. I do believe that we should not expand on the millionaire's tax and not lower that threshold. The other thing that a lot of people don't understand is that it's adjusted annually to accommodate for the inflation and to really recognize the benefits that the millionaire's tax is going to do. So it's a targeted tax reduction. And what it does, it expands eligibility for the working families tax credit to about 460,000 households, including young adults and seniors. It creates a sales tax exemption for diapers for all ages, for grooming and hygiene products, and over-the-counter drugs. And this would start in 2029, by the way. And as a small business owner, I like this myself. It more than doubles a small business tax credit on the business and occupation tax. So meaning that businesses with gross receipts under $300,000 will not owe a B&O tax. And those businesses with gross receipts up to $600,000 will receive the small business tax credit, again, beginning in 2029. There's other tax information, repealing the retail sales and use tax on some services. And there's also exemptions. It exempts hospitals, healthcare providers, and the warehousing and reselling of prescription drugs from that 0.5% B&O tax. It also has a local government mitigation where $200 million of annual revenue to help our local cities and counties still deliver key services. And then free school meals. And I think that's very important. The revenues from the tax are also used to expand the free school meals for all K-12 public school students. And so that's an addition of about 272,000 students. The Fair Start for Kids account that can only be used for childcare and early learning purposes. And so these are programs that are critical for the success of the Washington's families and economy. So that's important one as well.
So it does a lot more than I've heard before. And I've actually looked at it.
Yes. And so the most significant investment with that is going to be the general fund, which includes that K-12 education, healthcare, higher education, human services, and other essential government services.
So, you know, on your website, you talk about behavioral health, homelessness prevention, affordable child care as priorities. So I think in light of what we're talking about sort of more broadly, what do you think the state government is responsible for when it comes to making healthcare, maybe the government, not just the state government, but what is government responsible in terms of healthcare and social services, making them accessible? Like, what is your perspective on that? And what are your priorities?
The number one is accessibility, availability, and affordability. And I think unique to Skamania and Klickitat, to our rural economies, that makes a world of difference. People who are going to have babies should not have to drive all the way into the Portland area to have their babies. Working families who need childcare should not look to Oregon for a champion on that issue. We should have our own champions in Klickitat and Skamania County and in Clark County for that matter, and have a clear plan for addressing those child care deserts that we have. That will provide the support that our working families need in order to help us diversify an economy and build that pipeline that we need for a brighter future. And so those are unique areas that we don't highlight very well in Olympia. And I think by having a stronger voice for the 17th in Olympia, addressing the child care deserts, ensuring that we are looking at opportunities for our working families, I think that positions us better. So when I say child care deserts, I'm not just talking about opening up a business. We're talking about elevating the child care industry to the level that it needs to be, where they are also getting prevailing wage jobs or living wage jobs, where they are also getting tax credits and education and the proper training so that our children get the quality childcare that they need, where we are looking at weekend and evening childcare opportunities because we have a workforce that doesn't just do 9 to 5. And I think that's the uniqueness, and not maybe not just in our area, but throughout the state, where a one size fits all doesn't help. But by being more articulate of the key specificities in the areas of Klickitat and Skamania, that's in Clark County, and that's where people need to see themselves reflected in those decisions and discussions that are being made in Olympia. We can certainly move the needle on some of these things. I alone don't have the answers, which is why I'm going to look at our community organizations, our lobbyists, our industry, our residents, and our members of the public who care about these issues, because we all want a vibrant community where everybody feels accepted, respected, a belonging, and that they have those opportunities to own their own home, to raise a family, to have a living wage job in the area that they live in, so that we do have this community that we all want to be a part of.
So I'm hearing that things like housing and childcare are top priorities, yes. Which is interesting because we've had intermittent periods, I think, where the public discussion focuses on childcare. So I'm thinking 2020, for example, and during COVID. And then it just seems to get dropped.
Yeah, that I think that's where government failed our childcare industry.
Yeah, well, I can't disagree with that. I'm a mom.
Yep.
And I've been through it, and it is not easy. And I really appreciated that you said evenings and weekends and things, because if you have a job waiting tables, that's not a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. What kind of society are we creating where a parent has to have 3 jobs to be able to bring food to the table, or can't work because they have 3 kids and it costs more than a mortgage to get childcare? So, I mean, there's something wrong with that model, and clearly we need to address it.
We have to move on to some other topics. I think that those are really important issues. And you have worked in natural resources, and energy is a major part of your campaign. So how do you balance addressing climate change and protecting the environment with keeping energy reliable and affordable and also just practical?
So I feel like the 17th Legislative District is a leader in renewable energy with solar, wind, and hydropower. And I think those are 3 perfect areas of renewable energy, and to create a pipeline to ensure that we continue accessibility to those. There's another area called industrial symbiosis, and the Port of Kamiswashu is really taking a leadership role in that, and I'm very behind them in doing this. And this is what Denmark has done as well, and that's basically looking at our waste from one area to the other and capturing that, so we're able to lower the energy costs for a local community or within the ecosystem that they're in. And I also think that technology is advancing so much that taking a look at how we can capture heat from cooling centers and be able to use that to heat our area and vice versa, that's another area that we need to look at. We need to ensure that we modernize our infrastructure, that we create a reliable energy grid source of variety, and ensure that whatever this new technology is coming up, that we are learning from it and that we are using it in a sustainable and least impactful way. I also believe that a big part of this conversation is our tribes, the tribal sovereignty piece within the Columbia River Gorge area, because for so long that has been part of the fabric of this country, even before we came along. And so balancing that need, balancing the sustainability, not only of energy, but our fisheries as well, and that salmon fishing and the recreation and the tourism, which then leads us to think about how do we diversify the economy. And so that's why just looking at it one thing at a time doesn't help. We really have to look at the 17th as a whole, at this whole ecosystem.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. And it kind of leads me to another one of my questions that I did ask your opponent about also. And so Republicans have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on attack ads against you and others in the 17th and 18th LD. And one of them calls you dystopian Diana and portrays your environmental views as extreme. So what do you think of that sort of campaigning? And what should voters know about the actual differences between you and David Stevie on environmental and energy policy?
On the environment, as a fisheries biologist myself, having worked with the Forest Service in the mission of multiple use of public lands and really ensuring that we're looking at the greater public good and balancing that tension of human demand versus sustainability, that is a real skill. And so I have a better experience with not only as a federal employee in Forest Service managing public lands in Oregon, Washington, and Alaska, but also as a commissioner for Washington State Parks and Rec. So the demand for recreation, the demand to access water, the demand to for fisheries, the demand for minerals, the demand to get up to a volcano and see firsthand, the demand for research, the demand. So I have more experience from my opponent on that area, as well as being a first responder on a 21-person firefighting crew, wildland firefighter. So I don't take that for granted. I'm sure my incumbent as a veteran himself has that experience as well. So I'm not going to choose one or the other. In other words, I'm not going to choose jobs over the environment or the environment over jobs. It is possible to do both, to have jobs for the environment and to have an environment that sustains good jobs.
Okay. Well, we're getting toward the end here, and our show is called Democracy Talk. So what concerns you most about the state of American democracy right now, and what role, if any, can a state legislator play in strengthening democratic institutions and public trust?
Well, you're speaking to an individual who was told to go home on January 21st, 2025, as a result of DOGE coming in and causing chaos at the federal level, which led to my decision to retire early. So my concern is, after 35 years, I've weathered different administrations, and this is like none other. And to see a wonderful public land management agency and other agencies torn down the way it has been, you're seeing the impacts now multiplied along with climate change. So what I can do is really focus on why I'm running for office. And as a state legislator, there are two things. I am holding the line on our democracy. I am very lucky to live in the state of Washington, and I am committed to the people who live in the 17th legislative district and to represent their lived realities. And my word to everybody else is, that's why we must elect people who believe in our democracy and who are willing to ensure the protection of our rights.
Thank you. Well, we've got to go now. And so okay. Why don't you tell voters how they can reach you and learn more about you?
Okay. Well, there's this great website called electdianaperez.com. So www.electdianaperez.com. Go there. You can find out a little bit more about me. You can get involved. You can donate. And we have a campaign that is positive. We stay the high ground. We stay focused. We have values, and we believe in a brighter future for all of us.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been Democracy Talk, and we are here with Diana Perez, and we'll see you again next time.